Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to Unfiltered. This is our 100th episode today.
Yes, yes. Claps, claps.
Whistles, claps. Yep. And we have a good show this afternoon with a full house here. So, yeah, we'll get started into that and welcome our guest in a minute. But
well, Aaron, I'm you know, honestly, this isn't this is my 100th episode with you, but
yeah,
you've really... You've been the mule that's pulled this cart for quite some time, and congratulations really go out to you and
yes,
and keeping this thing alive for 100 episodes. So
one of the original shows on Heritage Radio Network, like first three or four, I think.
That's thank you,
right, Jack.
Yes,
yeah.
Awesome.
It was called At the Root of It in the beginning, but a little bit lengthy in.
No, it was awesome. The show really, it sort of like took off and allowed us to have a platform from which to work.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I look back to some of those early episodes. And I had some great guests on there, and have only fueled that guest list since. So it's been fun.
I'm happy to be part of it. So
thanks
anyway,
for coming along.
Yeah, 100th episode. So what kind of news we got today before we introduce our esteemed guest?
Well, why don't you tell me about this DRC tasting that you heard about today. Now that I'm not living in the city, I'm not privy to such invites.
I honestly wasn't invited either, but I had three friends that went and gave me all consistent reports. So Wilson Daniels, who is the longtime importer of Domain Romani Conti, and for listeners of this show, you'll know that DRC or Romani Conti is if not the finest wine to grace the planet, it is the most expensive wine to be sold on this planet. And the 09 vintage is no exception. And from all reports, the 09 Latache is, by some accounts, the best wine that they've ever tasted. And I think we may have Mr. John Cabon in the house later, not on the show, but at least drinking in the green room later.
You know he's got a stash of that already. So
well, but you know, in some cases, like my friend Matt Tornamine, who was there, and I had lunch with him today. He said that you know his allocation of the total DRC is 6 bottles, so he might get you know an Echezeau, a Grand Echezeau, RSV, Romani Saint Vivant, and maybe you know one Latache, and he won't even get an RC.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be Romani Conti.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's very scarce, but just to be invited, I guess, is a privilege and to taste those wines. And it just makes for the wine market to keep getting better and more expensive.
Yeah.
But also it just separates really the top wines from the rest of the crowd. So you don't see people dressing up in suits and standing in line and willing to suffer the indignity of that type of tasting for a $5 Chilean wine or you know a $10 Malbec. People,
no.
You know, they're drinking half of it and walking away. And these
opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah,
there.
Just totally the complete opposite. But anyway, that's for rarefied air, I guess.
Sure.
But what'd you got on the
Google
search?
Yeah, just poking through the interweb this morning, and I had come across a little news that Drew Barrymore has just entered the wine business, and I thought, hey, Brian likes her. she's blonde.
Oh yeah, that's my criteria.
She's making a Pinot Grigio in Italy. So I was like, interesting. Pinot Grigio.
What's the background?
It's called Barrymore. What's the background? I don't know. Just like numerous other celebrities sort of being enamored by the wine business. And California certainly being a place that a lot of these celebrities live and are surrounded by it. Say, hey, you know, got the funds. Give it a go. The crest of her family crest is the label. And the sort of tagline as to how to describe this Pinot Grigio that she's created is fresh, dynamic, and fun, just like her personality. So,
I think that the one of the standouts on Saturday Night Live is Abby Elliott, and she does the spot-on impersonation of Drew Barrymore, where she's basically this sort of slurring, talking out the side of her mouth hipster, which really is kind of what Drew Barrymore sounds like. But mm-hmm. because she's cool and been in so many great little movies, you kind of just forgive that she has essentially a speech impediment. Not really, but she does talk out of the side of her mouth. Am I correct in this?
Did yeah, you? I think she has a little quirk on
yeah,
this.
Little quirky. Yeah. So like little.
Why are you doing that?
I'm just playing. I'm like in my head as I'm envisioning her. Talking? Yeah.
So if I heard her talking about her Pinot Grigio with that, you know, I'd probably be inclined to like it just because.
Yeah, because she's like genuine. It's right, like, right. Yeah.
So why Pinot Grigio, do they say?
No, it doesn't really count as to why. I think. I guess it goes back to the personality of the lightness and the freshness and whatnot. But it's actually being distributed by Wilson Daniels, speaking of.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, maybe it'll do well.
Yeah, 1999.
Mallie, one of our dear friends, used to work at Eno, and she was a frequent customer
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's so. Right. Yeah, so she know. Just has an affinity for wine and yeah. maybe Italian wine, because Eno
yeah,
is
yeah, she was. I used to see yeah. her there all the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she was a regular over there.
Yep.
Well, speaking of food and our guest today, Aaron, introduce us to
the infamous Brent Young from the Meat Hook. Welcome, dun dun dun.
Thank you for having me.
So, Brent, give for those of us who are listening in Brooklyn and especially in Bushwick, sorry, I probably know your spot, but for our other four listeners outside of the metro area. Explain what the Meat Hook is.
This one's for you. The Meat Hook is a butcher shop in Williamsburg, and we are one of very few full surface whole animal butcher shops that we buy all of our meat from the Hudson Valley. Everything is locally sourced. We buy it whole and, you know, custom butcher it to order. We make all of our own charcuterie. We, you know, make our own sausages. So everything you see in the case, we produced ourselves. But I think the real point of pride is the sourcing, and that we have very close relationships with our farmers, know them very well. The slaughterhouses as well, so there's a traceability is like the easiest thing in the world.
Well, I mean it's so it's totally apropos because that's kind of what our show and the whole network is about. So it makes complete sense that you're here. How did you get involved with the Meat Hook? Are you the sole owner? Are you doing the sourcing yourself, or how did that play out?
Yeah, it's me and fortunately my two best friends are the two partners, and we're partnered with the Brooklyn Kitchen, that is a awesome house goods houseware store, and we're located inside of it. But me and my two friends have worked in butcher shops for the past 4 years, and just kind of like finally decided instead of doing it for other people, we would start doing it for ourselves. But
give it a go, right?
Yeah, and why not? And you know, we had been building those relationships with the farms all along. So once we had the opportunity to do it for ourselves, kind of just made the leap and you know, gave it a go.
Lucy, didn't you take me to this fine establishment at one point?
Yes, I did a few weeks ago. We brought you over there.
What'd you think?
What did you buy, Lou?
I have a problem with their chocolate milk, amongst many other
problem
things
meaning,
from there.
Problem meaning you love it.
Yes. It's every time I go in there, I get made fun of.
It's really kind of gross, actually. Like, no single person buys as much chocolate milk as Lucy
They're
does.
They're like, uh-oh, clear outing. I just clear the cabinet, and then I'm like, what else do you have back there? Do you have, like, four more?
And I witness the consumption.
Yeah, Aaron and Mikey as well have seen me consume at least one pint, little quart of those a day.
Just
yeah.
swigs throughout the day.
I mean, I think I drank one whole one when we were in the shop, because it had been a couple of weeks. I was like...
Really assume that the girl lives off of nothing but chocolate milk and beef jerky. The diet of an 8-year-old boy.
Right.
Hey, it works. It's fun. I don't know what else I got. Pork chops there?
Yeah, you got some pork chops.
Pork chops.
Brian picked up a few items from the housewares department.
Yes.
Keep his ladies at home happy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I got some little, these like little PBH-free, kid-friendly little storage containers to put my daughter's snacks in. So when she's like having a meltdown in Central Park, you put her, you know, her Cheerios in there or something. But,
I got everything in there.
You talked to me about customization a bit, and so you also obviously have customers that walk in and just could buy pork chops off the shelf.
Exactly.
But then you do stuff for restaurateurs, or how do you? Private clients or
no? It's really predominantly retail based environment where anyone can walk in, and the whole thing is about a conversation and having a conversation with, you know, food producers and also the people that are selling you the food. So you can get whatever you want, and it's another cool thing that you can easily come in and, you know. Valentine's Day was a pretty easy sell. You know, you cut a tray worth of 30 tenderloin steaks, and you know that they're going to be sold. You know, everyone's going to make that for their girlfriend. But, you know, for the most of the time, on like
hens, that's all right.
You know, it's cool to have people come in and say, you know, I have $20 to spend, and I really want to impress this girl. Like, what can I get? You're like, cool. And you get to walk them through
it. So most of your customers are men besides Lucy and the chocolate milk.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we really have
some female butchers in there too.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, mostly females. And it's funny now that, all of our interns are all female now. So we're slowly being overrun out of the shop.
So women with knife skills in your place.
Yeah.
I like that.
Brian could move in.
No, it sounds good.
It's very Kill Bill. Yeah. I like the idea of it.
Yeah, they're badasses though. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's something also bigger picture for the tie into Roberta's and sort of the mission behind Heritage and what you guys do at the Meat Hook too. I know there's some cross, you know, relationships that have come about from that too, and one of being this burgers shop Rippers in Rockaway that you launched this past summer. So
yeah,
I thought that project was pretty interesting, and it's in conjunction with one or two of the guys here from Roberta's.
Yeah.
And you know, Roberta started with a relationship with Heritage for the same sort of idea that you just spoke about, the relationships with the farmers. So there's definitely a powerhouse of, you know, three big independent players who have said, hey, rather than, you know, compete, let's see what we can do to sort of further this mission together.
Yeah, it's cool. And I think the Rockaway project is particularly interesting in that sense, because, you know, not only is it a ton of fun because you're running a burger shack at the beach, but it's also a bit of a, you know, challenge and experiment to see if you can get essentially a fast food restaurant off of the ground using properly sourced ingredients. And it's not the easiest thing to do in the world.
No.
Took me months and months and months to get the, like all of our sourcing in line so that everything could actually be affordable.
Right.
So there's a lot of thought and care.
On that train of thought, what is the cost of an average, you know, burger fries setup?
You can get a cheeseburger for $5.
Awesome.
Aaron and I have had that, and their cheese dogs.
Yeah.
There.
So you're competing with Shake Shack at that price point.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience is probably far superior.
Yeah, and you walk away feeling, you know, good and not sick.
Yeah.
No, but I think Shake Shack, you feel good, and then you feel sick.
Well, that's just because you drank two black and white milkshakes alongside. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For those of us who are less familiar with the project, where is it located, and how can they find it?
It's down at Rockaway Beach, right on the boardwalk on 86th Street. It's part of a larger project to revitalize all of the concession stands that are down there. So there are other concessions at 96th and 106th Street that are also fantastic.
And it's year-round or seasonal?
Seasonal.
And when's the season?
So Memorial Day. Already gearing up. We are already planning a pretty serious summer. Looking forward to it.
You should invite us to the grand opening.
Fantastic. Memorial Day weekend. It's going to be insane.
Well, maybe we'll skip that, but...
Well, when we tie this back to wine after the break, just want to talk a little bit about, you know, people who come into your shop and are looking to buy a certain cut. And are they asking you for wine suggestions? You know, how does a butcher sort of think about wine and how that might relate to the meat that they've chosen and breaking down the tannins and all that good stuff. So,
and if not, we should discover that here so we can talk about it more and maybe give you some sound bites for the future.
Sounds great.
But all right. So, all right, well, Jack, take us out. Damn. Well, I know what's right. I got just one life in a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground and I won't back down. So welcome back, folks, to our 100th episode of Unfiltered. Your host, Brian DeMarco, with the lovely and talented Aaron Fitzpatrick at the helm as well. And our guest today is Mr. Meat Hook.
Yes, otherwise known as Brent Young.
And he has brought some very tasty treats for us today. It looks like we have some flat meat and some pate in a jar and some tasty-looking bread. So we're going to try this stuff out with some of the wines we've poured for you today. Aaron, what should we try first?
Well, I think we're looking at, I'm not quite
here,
sure.
I'll give you a rundown of what we got here. We have right here is just our roast pork. It's seasoned and cured for 3 days. Then we do a slow roast on it. It's like just a very simple sliced kind of deli meat, but glorified deli meat. We have our house-made mortadella.
Mortadella?
In other words, bologna.
Yeah.
Italian bologna.
It is, but really, really, really proud of that guy. We have a country pate that's like a very basic rustic French pork liver pate and chicken liver mousse as well, the ever popular Brooklyn
awesome.
Favorite.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when people come to your shop, do they ask you, like, they kind of put this whole idea of what their meal is going to be and what your suggestions are, or do they kind of sure what they're looking for?
No, most everybody will ask our suggestions.
Yeah.
which is really great. It's a huge compliment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, not only can we suggest a cut of meat, but maybe another way to do it. And honestly, 9 times out of 10, if we, like, you can kind of tell the way people ask, they're like, you know, can I get like 2 pounds of pork tenderloin? You're like, what are you making?
Right.
They're like, well, I'm braising it. And you're like, no, like,
yeah.
You know, here, let me save you $20 and give you something better.
Yeah.
So, Yeah.
It's similar to, in a way, walking into a wine shop and you're sort of like, this is what I'm cooking for dinner and this is what I want to drink with it. And, you know, when I think about going to your shop, I'm also thinking about what I'm going to drink. And like, you
exactly.
know, it, there's a nice parallel between that, especially when you go somewhere that's like a boutique wine store and you can actually have that dialogue with the, you know, the salesperson.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's nice. I've got to know a lot of the guys at the wine stores around the neighborhood and always have that same conversation.
Do we have this wine poured?
Yes, we do, actually. Yes,
Let's disperse.
Okay.
I've opened, or Aaron opened, a beautiful bottle of vintage 2007 Jean-Max Roget Sancerre Rouge. And for those who are not familiar with Sancerre Rouge, it is Pinot Noir from the Loire Valley. This particular vintage 07 was really, really good, and it's a single vineyard. Which I know, it's like, hello.
It's not really technical.
Masterpiece Theater. Yeah. Now, it's a single vineyard called La Grange Demier, and it's Cuvée La Grange Demier, and it's the appellation is from Cher, which is called Beaux. But it's from Cher, which is a single one of the little microclimates mm-hmm. of schist and shale in
usually served with a little bit of a chill.
Absolutely.
Unusual. There's not too much Sancerre Rouge being produced in the world, so this is a special bottle from a great small producer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so what do you think there, sir?
I'm going to preface this whole thing that I don't know a single thing about wine. All right?
But that's not why you're here.
No. All right. So, question on the table is, what should we eat?
Yes, with this wine. You just had a sip.
Yeah. I'd start light. I'd go roast pork.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Good call.
Good
call.
Yeah. Everything else is a little in your face. So I'd go for that. You guys are cool eating stuff, right?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is what we do.
But pork I think is our one of those studio audience here is starving, so.
Give them something.
Oh, always hungry. Just speaking of pork in general, I think it's a super versatile meat. You know, you can pair it with a lot of things, and so sometimes it can be trickier to match. And it's one of those things that's oftentimes when you think about pairings, you think about the sauce that they're being cooked in, you know, the sauce that the pork is being cooked in, or the certain meat will certainly determine what to drink with it. So pork is such a versatile meat. I think that it pairs with a lot of wines, which sometimes can make it trickier.
Right. Well, it's the other white meat.
Far from.
Right. It is the white meat, right?
It is the white meat, yes, Brian. Thank you.
Yeah. So the other item that we purchase quite often from the Meat Hook is their house-cured ham, which is also a favorite item in our barn.
Yeah.
Well, Brent, let me ask you about the type of pigs that you're using. I mean, are these all grass-fed? These are free-range pigs? They're not like pen?
Yeah, they're all natural, pastured, like indoor outdoor pigs. So most pigs, like a well-raised pig, has a place to go outside and a place to go inside. Pigs predominantly do not eat grass. They destroy grass, but eat a corn and soy based diet, and then you got to give them plenty of room to destroy more things. So really, like their environment
is digging,
rooting, and wallowing. So a happy pig is one that has like room to roam and destroy things. So that's super important. And no matter, like, you know, you can let them out. You can let them out in the forest to forage, and it's a great diet. But for the most part, if you're actually raising them on a farm, you're going to supply like a corn and soy based mm-hmm. feed as well.
What about scraps?
Scraps are great. Yeah, garden scraps are kind of the best thing. Yeah, a lot of the when we started, we've gotten pigs from all over the place, and ones from the Queens County Farm Museum when they were allowed to have pigs were really awesome. So they had a huge farm. That just had a lot of excess, So those farm scraps for a small scale farm really produced a pretty amazing product.
You know, in Spain, when we talk about the Iberico hams, mm-hmm. is there anything upstate? Are there any sort of unusual breeds of pigs that are, you know, chowing down at certain times a year on something like that special, which then gives them...
Chestnuts.
Chestnuts, okay.
Yeah, totally. There's, yeah, yeah one, a couple things come to mind. One in particular is a farmer that we work with that's actually like really trying to crossbreed hogs to come up with the perfect butcher shop pig, because one of the major problems is that you can make a really special pig, and there are a lot of really special pigs out there, but they get to be really expensive, and then the thing that they're valued for is their fat, which is awesome, but then you have a lot of extra fat it's like, I don't know, one of the things is that, like, you know, a lot of people will ask about lardo.
Yeah.
Lardo is something that no one will ever purchase from a butcher shop.
Yeah, it's a novelty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, if you put it on a piece of scallop at a restaurant, great. Yeah. But no, like, nobody's...
I tried it.
Yeah, exactly. But nobody's ever actually gonna purchase that. So we have to be cautious of, like, you know, how much we're purchasing. So we're working with this farm to create the perfect breed of heritage pig that's, like, basically the perfect mutt that will be amazing heritage pork, but also not have a crazy high fat content, a very, very reasonable fat content, which is great. I've been super excited. The name of the farm is Gibson Family Farm. Thus far, the product has just been some of the best pork I've ever had.
And that's strictly their diet. What they eat is how you judge. You're not talking about genetically modified pigs.
No, not genetically modifying. No, it's just or like it's like a royal wedding.
So it's a breeding.
You really want to get the best guy and the best gal together to create the perfect family. Mm-hmm. So it's more like that. No, not genetically modifying anything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's that. There's another farm called Raven and Boar that feeds a lot of whey from what is the creamery that's around that area. But I mean, creameries, breweries.
This is like veal that's milk fed.
It's the same
kind of thing.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. It's essentially the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. But those pigs are like ultimately end up being like very 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 mild and veal like. They're like, you know, really succulent. But it's funny, all of these things are really great. But what makes an Iberico ham an Iberico ham is the fact that you have someone, a knowledgeable charcutier, curing the ham. What makes special pigs really special is when you cure them. Like, the pork chops are pretty good, like, when you have them fresh, but all of the magic really comes out whenever you cure it, and that's what makes it something special.
So talk to me about the curing process and, like, the standard curing process that the average Americans eating out of the grocery store versus something that you would do and why your product is special.
Sure. I mean, the curing process for anything that you're going to buy from a grocery store is injected, you know, a brine injected piece of meat that just has a bunch of needles shoved into it and has a brine. It sits there for 2 days, and then they usually smoke it, and then it's on a grocery store shelf. Where we in any classic butcher shop will.
But is that necessarily bad?
Is it bad? No. I mean, it's not gonna make any magic happen. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, is it bad that, you know?
So it's not
dudes in Australia make, you know, $7 bottles of wine. No, like, it's not good.
Well, hold up there, cowboy. So it's not Lintastic.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, all right. So tell me what you're doing differently that, like, separates what you're doing from the par.
Sure. Yeah, it's all time. As with anything, just being patient. So as in a ham, you know, doing a dry rub of salt, sugar, spices, and letting that hang out for over a month, letting that you rinse that, and then you do a first hang of it, and then then you have your like curing cellar or wherever where you're actually going to hang it for over a year. If you're talking 2 days versus a year, you know, it's kind of an inherent difference in your ultimate product.
So it's kind of like the same way that people perceive prosciutto di Parma versus, you know, rank and file prosciutto, which isn't, you know, isn't hanging for 18 months, isn't getting trimmed, isn't getting, you know, cured the same way. So
sure.
And Iberico ham, as Aaron rightly points out, is some of the, you know, the most tasty but also expensive ham.
Sure.
And you know, you're paying, you know, $20 for a plate of, you know, 6 or 7 slices.
Yeah.
When, you know, you could buy a big, you know, ham steak at the
two meals of the price of 7 slices of ham.
Yeah, the giant food at the Associates supermarket.
It's all relative. It's all relative.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that you guys do a good job of keeping prices in check with, you know, a slight margin above of what you would pay at a grocery store for much better quality. So
Thank you.
A little nod to you. Yeah.
We try.
Mm-hmm. So we have the second wine here, which is a very interesting wine. That,
not much I can tell about it from the label.
There's not a thing, and I wish Emma, who is here, she had a mic because she could maybe help fill in the holes for me here. But
well, the first thing to look at when you look at the color difference between these two wines is just like, you know, the second wine is dark, dense, almost a color, you know, a deep purple black, and then you look at that next to the Sancerre, if anyone still has that in their glass, and it's like, you
well,
know.
We picked these two wines probably on purpose because they're both ends of the spectrum. But what I do know about this,
probably on purpose,
probably on purpose, and is that this is a project by the very famous jewelry designer Elsa Peretti, and if you don't know who Elsa Peretti is, she's the woman who designed the heart shaped necklace for Tiffany, and it was the thing that you know, when you go to Tiffany, they sell that necklace and the keychain basically for the last 40 years, and then, you know, 10 people out of 1,000 buy a diamond ring. So Elsa Peretti has made her fortune largely in part because of her jewelry designs. What she has done with some of that fortune is she decided to buy a winery in Spain. And not just any place in Spain, but the most obscure place with no DO. If you know what a DO is, it's basically like France, where there you have areas that have been denominated to be, you know, classic growing regions. But this area has no DO.
It does have some good restaurants, though.
It does have some amazing restaurants. Yeah. But it's actually just, it's called Catalunya. So this area is in Catalunya, which, you know, they're speaking Catalan. So it's north of Barcelona, about 2 hours on the train. And I've been to this winery, and this winery, for lack of a better example, is the first and only, to my knowledge, currently the only carbon negative winery in the world.
CO2.
What is it, Emma?
It has the first zero CO2 designation in Spain.
So as the first, so what that means is that they're taking nothing and they're giving nothing back they're not polluting, they're not doing anything negative to the environment. But the weird thing is that it's an Italian owner of the winery, it's a Spanish winery that's carved into a mountain, and there's two French winemakers, and they're using French grapes
and some serious oak
and a ton of oak. But so let's try this wine. Brent, what do you think? Have you had a sip of this yet?
Yeah.
And he's opening up the chicken liver mousse because this is a brooding wine.
For yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, right there. Lots of dark fruit. I'd say the two things that you just pulled out, the pâté and the, I don't know what kind of pâté that is, but.
Yeah, both of the.
Oh, I can smell that. Oh my god! I took off the lid. That was like, it was like, you know, meat exhaust.
That yeah.
Is a frequent buy of ours. Holy cow!
Yeah, because
it's a religious experience, Brian.
Oh. Yeah, because yeah, everything else.
Oh my god.
Well. So sorry, go ahead.
No, definitely bring out the liver meats, you know, things that have a punch to them.
God,
this wine can definitely stand up to it.
Well, yeah, it's amazing to think that, you know, this is like almost like a liverwurst sandwich mm-hmm. in the olfactory lobe here.
Mm-hmm.
Get in there,
Ryan. Yeah,
oh, no, someone make me a little nosh,
little
toast point with that.
Now, is this a Roberta's baguette that you brought, or Filone?
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, again, yeah.
Chef Lucy even, to the rescue.
Yeah. Even selling Roberta's baguettes.
Yep. That's good stuff.
Not that much, babe.
Sharing here.
So anyway, this...
Here, try this.
So this wine... Yeah, Aaron, you're right. So what's your tasting note on this wine?
Lots of dark fruit. Sort of more of a concentrated style. Dark cherries, blackberries. But... Sort of the I think this needs a little bit of a time to breathe because it does have quite a bit of oak on it in the palate. Just trying to let it breathe a little bit. But it's nice. It's super smooth.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah. What was that? That was a mortadella?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, for an 08, you know, given how youthful this still is, it's drinking really smoothly.
So the name of this winery is called Echo G, which is basically my wine, and this is this is the super premium they make called Echo Me, which is basically again my wine, and it's really nice with this mortadella. I mean, this is probably the spiciest, most interesting mortadella I've ever had.
Awesome.
Some serious like clove action in here, right? If
Thank
I remember,
you. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's funny. It's a cool product to always try because I don't know. As in with making a lot of charcuterie, you can never.
I'm going for
Ryan wants more.
I'm going for, the one you folded up for me. Thank you.
Yeah, you can't teach a product, but you can teach technique. So it's a technique that you have for making it, but it changes a little bit every single time.
Is it the same person that makes it every time?
Mm.
No.
No, it's like two or three of us.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left to go, but I wanted to ask you, I know you had a recent trip to France and you've spent some time with some French butchers, and being that we have our Frenchie Lucy in the room and sort of you're coming off of I imagine what was a nice sort of high from that trip. Are there any things that you sort of can distinguish between the mentality of a French butcher who's been doing this for his life and sort of, you know, where we are right now in the States with sort of a return to the small butcher?
The biggest thing that I can think of really is that the French butchers drink way more Japanese scotch than you would ever imagine.
Yeah, right.
It's really, really shocking and
like the good
and
stuff.
quite painful. They really had a heavy hand on that for a week straight.
Okay.
Which was really a lot of fun, but like I said, quite painful. It was awesome. It truly was an eye-opening experience.
Talk about a heavy hand, Lucy.
those guys have an approach and they have a culture.
Yeah.
It's like every bit of butchery, we like to say, is a Rorschach test as far as what you're looking to cook and even the way that you're looking to cut. It can change drastically based on, you know, what you're doing as a culture. Like I said, we'll never sell lardo, where those guys will go through 20 pounds of lardo right. in a week.
And duck fat and goose whatever else.
Yeah. All of that stuff. And you know, and they will really take the time to seam out the smallest possible muscle because there is an appreciation for it in their culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's part of, you know, part of our shop also that we're, you know, try to have an education process with
right.
with our customers that you know, it's fun to cook, but it's also cool to learn new things.
But you also have to balance, I think, your commerce aspect with, you know the neighborhood wants. What does a neighborhood want? Yeah, what? How
pork.
Much? Yeah, how much
sausage? They
pork
want
and sausage.
Sausage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is great, you know. That's the majority of our business is making sausage is both classical and classic and, you know,
experimentation
and totally insane.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a classic standby that, you know, our customers look for, but, you know, it's cool to introduce them to new steaks also that they might not have thought of before.
Well, what cut would you use for the classic Delmonico? And how would you do your version of it?
So,
final thought.
Great question. All right. Classic Delmonico is actually a rib steak, but everybody knows what a rib steak is. So we're not going to call a rib steak a Delmonico. A Delmonico is about,
not my first rodeo, sir.
12 inches up into the shoulder. There's a section that's called the chuck eye roll, which is about the least sexy name that you could ever ever name anything. So we call those the Delmonicos instead, and that is like by far, I'd say, everyone's favorite steak. It's my nice. It's my personal favorite steak. It's not the most tender in the world, but it's got texture. It's got fat, and it's always got a little bit of age on it.
And
so it's
tons
got some
of flavor.
Funk. Yeah. So it's not, you know, it's not a friendly steak. You're kind of like walking up to a little bit of a fight. So it's something that you would have with, our second wine here, that is going to be super in your face, and that's what I really like out of my
steaks.
And
how thick do you cut that?
Cut those at about inch and a half. Because you want to cook them to, actually, to the side of like medium, like the side of medium of medium rare. Render a little bit more of the fat; it becomes more tender. But just a fantastic.
So, Marco, what are you drinking with that? Because I know you're thinking about that right now.
Yeah, I'm going Barbaresco, Barolo, something like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
And maybe cool. I mean it depends.
Got the tannins to cut through that protein. Yeah.
And if you're talking that it's got that bite to it, maybe the Brunello di Montalcino is really the call, because it's going to have at least 3 to 4 years of oak aging, so maybe that's going to really be the right wine. But you know what we'll do, my friend, on our final minute here, is we will plan a play date, you and I, at the butcher shop with a bunch of wine. And we'll cook up some steaks.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, this has been a great show.
Yeah, Brent, thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
And Brian for bringing the wine, and Emma for joining. And a little shout out to Mikey Johnson, who's sitting in the corner nice and quiet in Seawell Street
and
here,
Lucy
for
Lou.
Joining.
And Lucy Lou.
And last but not least, Miss Lucy Lou. Lots of love. And thanks to Jack and Carlos, as always, for keeping this up. I'm doing a great job at it. So
100 shows.
100.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.